This is your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 Chai FM. Alright, Essie says, how the quality of the show is irrelevant as long as you saw it before anyone else on, she doesn't say Netflix, she says something rude. Okay. As long, that's all that matters, that is sad. Wow. Essie, you are too negative today.
I'm so glad to see David and Essie texted
talk.
Because
no, because Essie's having a very bad day.
You don't need to have a session.
Just give me some just give me some background here. Janine says, I'm torn between listening to Jason and David. That's why we brought them both at the same time. That's the things we do for you, mm-hmm. Janine. And this is what we're doing for Essie, because Essie woke up feeling very, very negative today.
From the very beginning.
Yeah, Essie, come on. Let's try and turn that frown upside down. All right, fine. That's just
I must use
irritating.
That one, Howard.
Yes, exactly. Melinda says, I was just grateful that she behaved somewhere. She's okay being told what to do at school. She has accepted her place at school, but at home she wants to be boss. That's fairly common, isn't
it,
David? What is it about that?
You know, it's all about, like, you know, control and not being in control. And, you know, we have to often, well, we have to. I think it's the norms of society where we often give up, and we do give up control when we leave our homes, the sanctity of our homes. We need to listen to authority. We need to, whether you're a child, the principal, your teacher, whether you're an adult, you know, the boss, police.
So there's expectations wherever we go.
Wherever we go, we need to moderate our behavior.
But I think we've got to do that at home as well.
We need to, within reason, of course. And I think for me, that's the difficulty, is that to allow your child to express themselves, because that is their safe place, and we need to give them a safe place to do it. But, and I know we're saying this a lot these days, there's a fine line.
So it's interesting, because when you work with businesses, one of the things that you always look at in a business is, and I might have mentioned it before, is you've got a lot of rules. What time you start working, what time you finish, what the expectation is around claiming expenses. You know, those are the rules. But there's also unwritten ground rules in every environment. And I believe it's the same in a family and in a business. In fact, I just wrote an article on exactly that. As if you're a consulting firm and you go into another company to work there, what are those unwritten ground rules? If you work at your own company, what are those rules? Are the rules that, those unwritten rules in terms of behavior around here, .. what do we do? Do we blame other people? Do we put our hands up and help other people? Do we get involved in? So those are the unwritten ground rules, and every family has them too. And it is probably worth, in my view, taking a little bit of time and understanding what those unwritten ground rules are in every family.
There's no question. You know, we plan so many things. How are we going to, if we're going to go on a road trip, how are we going to get there? Where are we going to stop? You know, we don't often as parents actually sit down and go, right, what's the plan here? What do we want to do with these little things? You know, what are the values that we want to instill? You know, is it important for us to sit around at supper?
I'm thinking exactly that. Yeah. So is family dinner something that is important? Well, maybe that's an unwritten ground rule that we sit around at the table, we put our cell phones down, we have a conversation about our day.
Right. And I think, again, it's becoming more and more important because we live such busy lives, and because of that, we don't sit down and actually communicate. It's very, very bye, cheers, how you, very, very abrasive, short conversations, and no real sitting down and really connecting. And that's very important. Also, the idea, which is kind of contradictory to what we're talking about, is that, you know, our worlds are so structured, our children, even adults. And that's why there's this, you know, we hear all the time, take children out of structured playtime, you know, like whether it's, you know, it's good to play soccer, it's good to, you know, do things where there are rules and there's interaction with other kids. But what about the unstructured stuff? And that's also so important, is just let them go for a swim. It doesn't have to be swimming training. Throw them into the garden, you know, take a spade. It doesn't have to.
Okay, moms and dads, yes, are you listening?
Just let them be. And I think that's why, you know, seeing all these articles over the last, I'd say, 5 to 10 years, where they're saying, just let children play, because we've got so much structure. And I would say the same thing when it comes to adults, is, you know, there's so much structure in the day, and, you know, we need to, I think, so importantly, just allow some time to, not be structured, you know, allow ourselves to be free of those kind of restrictions.
And that's what we need to do. At the same time, you know, and one of the conversations we wanted to have was around Jacob Zuma's sick note. And the reason, obviously, that I'm talking about this is not because it's relevant to Jacob Zuma, but in fact his behavior was almost childlike. Getting a doctor's note, a ill written and constructed doctor's note, to get out of something that obviously is going to be very, very unpleasant for him. But even though he has that responsibility, when our kids wake up and they've got double Afrikaans, or they've got a
Howard, that's not the first time I've heard you talk about.
Do you think there's some issues there?
I happened to be in the car when you mentioned double Afrikaans yesterday.
Yes, no, I do get it. Yeah. I do get it. Your kids wake up, they don't want to go to school. There is something going on. Maybe there's something social. Maybe they're just bored. Maybe they're just tired. Suddenly they're sick. How do you deal with that?
Well, I can tell you that, you know, when I studied at university and we went into this idea of psychosomatic disorders, and when you think about it, psych means the mind and soma means the body. What a powerful link there is between the mind and the body. And we can say that, but actually when I see it, and I think when my colleagues see it, it is so, so powerful. And I have learned over, you know, the years how powerful the mind is over one's body. So to say that, you know, children can experience physical symptoms, actual physical symptoms, which have no medical basis, really, no medical, explanation, is so plausible. But it's important to keep in mind, and obviously we're not talking about, you know, Jacob Zuma, we're talking about, children or adolescents, even adults, that what we call now a somatic symptom disorder is actually extreme anxiety around physical sensations that one has in one's body. And it can be absolutely debilitating.
So, and genuine. Actually, it's a genuine pain.
Genuine pain. You actually feel it, whether it could be a feeling of fatigue or it can be a very specific pain, but it can be absolutely debilitating. And that's why it's so tricky to deal with, because it's about understanding that there is a genuine physical feeling.
We should get, David, because I mean, when we feel anxious about something, our blood pressure goes up. You know, we know this. We know that stress has a very physical reaction in a manifestation in our body. So why would it be any different with our children?
You know, Howard, I could tell you stories which absolutely have shocked me, really, and that's quite a word.
For a psychologist, yes, it is a word.
Well, I can tell you a story of a child who saw another child have an epileptic episode, and obviously very traumatic. And this child, a few months later, presented with very, very similar symptoms. At night had woken up and had bitten his tongue, and clearly seemed like an epileptic episode. And what were the chances of these two children having it? And they, you know, obviously had all the necessary tests, were sent to all over to Israel, to England, and even to America. And what came back was that this child was somatizing, and purely because of that extreme event of watching his friend have.
That is unbelievable.
And for me, that has stuck out for me for so many years, and just shows me the power of the brain. So instead of the child needing to go into epileptic medication, really needed to
just deal. Needed a good smack. Sorry, was that the wrong answer?
Howard.
No.
Wrong answer.
Okay, this is why I never became a therapist.
This is true.
Yes.
This is true.
Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, just needed some gentle therapy.
that
was one word. And medication, because his therapy was so, ACE therapy, his anxiety was so high.
Yeah.
All the symptoms went away. So you're absolutely right that often this, you know, what precipitates this is a traumatic event.
Right.
Which might be, you know, a real traumatic event, or even, and there's so many others that I can point out. It actually could be even a conflict in a child's mind where they feel kind of pulled between, what they feel they should be doing and what they are doing. So it could be really about a conflict within their own minds, identification with someone who's ill, you know, so someone around them who they know is ill, and they can start developing those, you know, those symptoms as well. There are many different scenarios, but it always seems to be some kind of abuse, a catalyst to a fight or flight response.
You're right. Which is interesting because very often as parents, our instinct is, you're making this up. You're not really sick. Time is 8 to 27. I'd love your thoughts on it. We'll be back with David Abramson, psychologist in a private practice. We are talking about, sick notes, but way beyond that. Good morning. Time is 8:33. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem on 101.9 Chai FM. M says maybe the parents are the ones who should be getting therapy, and then the children would then improve. I'm a big believer in that. Michael Lubitz says, simple parenting skills, or does this start earlier? I'm not sure. It says, simple parenting skills, allowing a child to feel their emotions, healthy in the moment, would overcome a lot of the symptoms and manifestations. The children's journey is a process. The children's journey process I use is 20 minutes long, and it clears so much. Melinda says, so what treatments calms them down to stop a sore tummy? This is really where I wanted to get to as well, Melinda, is what treatments calms them down, stops a sore tummy, and gets them to school, especially on test days? Do you treat the symptoms, like giving them Calpol and put them in the car? I never seem to know when it's a cry wolf situation. Obviously, you can't live on Calpol every day. P.S. Rescue Remedy is not strong enough. that is from... And I think what Melinda is actually expressing is every parent's dilemma, because we've all been there where we've ignored a symptom because we think that the child is not being genuine or performing or trying to get out of something, but in the meantime it turns out to be something, and that's every parent's biggest nightmare. Oh my word, I've been a neglectful, terrible parent, and now what? So how do we deal with this?
Well, I think every child, every person is different.
Sure.
I think the first thing is to try, as soon as there is this consistent complaint, whether it's around a tummy or a headache, or, you know, it could be a mix, but you see that there's a consistent complaint happening, look for a pattern. What is happening? Is this, and I would first say, let me first say, is always the first port of call in the beginning of the process is to have things checked out medically. That is the first. And I suppose Linda might say, well, you know, do I do that every single time my child complains? No, if you're starting to see a pattern where you've checked out the stomach ache or you've checked out the headache and the doctor's saying, really, there doesn't seem to be anything that I'm concerned about, then look for the pattern. What is the child trying to avoid? And is there a conflict in the child's mind? Is there insecurity and anxiety around something? I think the first thing is to, you know, try and talk to the child. I know something's going on. Your body's telling us that there's something wrong. I believe that you are feeling sick.
So I think the first thing is that, and that's something we have to learn as parents, is these things are real. Certainly in the child's mind.
Howard, it is real.
It is real.
It feels sore. It actually feels sore.
Genuinely feels sore.
There's a very big difference between pretending and somatizing.
And I think we can tell. I think we can tell as parents if our kids are pretending.
If it's somatizing, I think we need to make that clear. There is real pain. The child experiences real discomfort or a real feeling of dizziness or fatigue. It's a physical sensation, and it's the reaction to that physical sensation that we're looking at. And so the first thing, when it is milder, you know, if you want to call it on the continuum, a milder form of somatization, I think, again, it's really about trying to identify with your child what is causing that distress, what is upsetting. Is it that mom and dad had a fight? Is it that you've changed schools? Is it that, there's a conflict in your mind around doing something that you're feeling bad about, you know, and you know you shouldn't be? It could be so many things, but you're having a fight with a friend at school, or you're not verbalizing something that's bothering you, and so you're expressing it through your body. Very, very often happens. So the first thing would be really is to try and sit down with your child and say to them and explain to them that your body can have two types of pain. The one is absolutely if you're sick and you've got a virus or you break your arm, those are physical pains related to something that has happened from a medical, physical point of view. But that your body can absolutely experience pain from psychological conflict and difficulty and psychological.
How old can a child be to start understanding that?
I think, you know, as young as 4 or 5, they can start understanding that. You know, starting to differentiate between a worry pain and a physical pain. And obviously, I think, as I said, the first port of call is to make sure that there's nothing medical. But when you start to see that pattern forming, then we have to start asking questions. And I suppose the best thing to do, as I say, is try to help your child to verbalize it and then help them to address the situation. So you not only just empower them, but you might want to get involved at the school, have a meeting at the school with the child's teacher. The child's feeling very anxious about the work that they have to do, or they feeling very anxious or overwhelmed by the friend situation. Or it might be that you know, you as parents need to go for couples counseling because you're fighting too often in front of the children. But distraction. Distraction's a very important one. So once you've spoken to the child, distraction, and try and help them to face that difficulty, obviously with the support and the intervention to show them, A, that you take them very seriously, and B, that something can be done, that it's, and they don't have to do it alone. So obviously empower them, give them ideas.
So your child doesn't want to go to school. She's 10 years old and 11 years old, whatever, it doesn't matter. She doesn't want to go to school because she's got a very sore tummy.
Right. And this is not the first time. So you can see that there's a pattern happening. Right. And last week you took her to the doctor, and the doctor said, listen, there's nothing really serious. And or maybe you've taken her twice to the doctor, and there's a pattern. Or maybe it's a Thursday. It's always happening on a Thursday. Maybe they've got, like Howard, double Afrikaans.
I've heard of that.
We can call that I think we should call that a syndrome, double Afrikaans. Where the child is scared of their teacher.
Everyone's got their double Afrikaans. Right. It might be something else. That was my point of
It might be I've had this with martial arts coaches who are very strict, and they just, you know, they don't want to say anything because they know that maybe, that it wouldn't be the right, in their mind, right thing to do. So distraction and dealing with the situation, showing that that can be overcome with speaking out and helping. But I need to say this, that if it's not helping, if your child is not verbalizing what's wrong, or they're not, or they're feeling too overwhelmed by the situation, then definitely, you know, consulting with a good social worker, psychologist, to do some therapy. And I think the best way to go is cognitive behavioral therapy. So to understand.
On that day, though, do you push the child to go to school?
Well, again, depends on their level of distress, you know. And if you've got a child who is so distressed by a situation, again, you know, vomiting or just hysterical.
Okay, right, right.
But if you can, and again, so we have to, you know.
No, I don't think we're talking about that level. But my tummy's sore. I'm really not feeling well. I don't want to go to school. Right. I can't. I'm not going to feel well at school.
Absolutely. I think for me, to try and help them, what we call to have a corrective emotional experience. So the anxiety would say, don't go to school because this terrible thing is going to happen. And helping them, even if you take your child, take them to school, have a chat to the teacher, have a chat to the social worker at school, and help them to have a corrective experience, meaning that what they perceive to be so scary.
And what was exactly, they managed to overcome.
And then you can say to the child, wow, you know, was that worry really, really correct? And I think those corrective experiences are invaluable. But let's keep in mind that if the child is completely overwhelmed,
then just be careful.
Be careful to push them too far.
I'm chatting to David Abramson. He is a psychologist in private practice. We're talking about what to do when kids present with an illness. M says, I've experienced incorrect diagnosis Don't be quick to say it's all in the mind. Mm. I think that's exactly what David is saying. Just make sure. And Janine says, our worst case of cry wolf turned out to be Guillain-Barre syndrome. Huge guilt issues attached to that, I'm sure, sure.
And I think it's so important, and we need to say that.
I think most parents have done this where we've been dismissive because we actually just can't end them anymore. Absolutely. We get to a stage sometimes as parents think, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah.
Now, and something else. And then it does turn out to be something, and then you actually feel like the worst people in the entire world. Yeah.
But definitely check things out physically first, and sometimes it does. It is a process. It does take some time to establish that it is a somatic, you know, symptom, what we call a symptom disorder, which is not my, not calling things disorders, but, you know, where it is psychosomatic. And often it is a process, because the first thing that you want to do is, wow, you know, say, oh my God, because the child is in pain. The child is feeling discomfort.
Well, one thing we've learned with one of our kids who definitely has this very close connection between emotional pain and then becomes, and actually can make themselves ill, properly ill, which is incredible. But as they've grown older, what we've tried to do is empower them by saying, you know, same as your emotions and your mind made you ill, It can work the other way. What an incredibly strong mind you obviously have, because you can make yourself better.
And I think, you know, the irony is that in order to enhance the power of the mind, the irony is that I think it's so important that we acknowledge the feeling. You know, there's always this feeling or this kind of instruction that if you're going to be strong-minded, you need to avoid emotion. And it's actually the opposite. We need to acknowledge the emotion. We need to acknowledge the fear. Be realistic, and then about what you're feeling. Let's talk about it, and that builds a strong mind, because then we can control what's happening in your head by putting it out there, understanding it, and dealing with it, not repressing it and keeping it to oneself.
Absolutely. We're going to continue this conversation. We're going to bring Lubomaya Kiso into it as well. It is 8:43.